Okay. So if we all have the place, we're looking at Boi Rav Papa, which we decided is 10 lines down from the top of Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. And the goal for the first part of today's discussion is to try to understand Rashi on this sugya. So Rav Papa has the following suffix. Nechleka hatyomes mahu. What's the din if the tyomes gets split? Rashi says, what's the tyomes? Rashi says, medubakim kitaomim. There's a leaf that is really made up of two leaves, but they're attached together like Siamese twins, as we call them. And now they were split. So they're no longer attached. And this is going to be the suffix of Rav Papa as to whether or not he was, Harvey, let's move your shtecker a drop to the left.
I'm going to have to move the whole, push the cable down.
Yeah. Push the cable. Okay. Okay, great.
Okay, I don't know what to do. Okay, got breathing space now?
Yeah. Okay. Right. Let's take a look at Rashi. So we're on Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, and we're looking at Rashi, Dibra Maschil, Nechleka Hatyomes. Rashi says, Shnei Olim Elyonim Emtsayim. So we're talking about the Shidra goes all the way up to the top, and it ends with two leaves that are attached to each other.
Yeah,
Rashi.
I can't find that Rashi.
Yeah, okay. So let's, how do we find the Rashi?
It's there.
Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, right?
Yeah, Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, Dibra Masel Nechleka Hatyomes.
Isn't every leaf a double leaf? I mean, it's not just the middle.
Yeah.
Every leaf.
Correct.
Okay.
But we're talking about the middle leaf that comes right out of the Shidra up on top. And that got split.
Okay, sorry.
Now, what we're going to discuss, Dr. Joel, is what happens if other leaves got split.
Okay.
That's going to be the next question. But first, let's get the case of Nechleka Tiomes. So again, Rashi identifies the Tiomes as the end of the Shidra. And the Shidra terminates with this leaf that's made up of really two leaves that are Midubakim Kitiomes, Rashi says. And now it got split. So far, Rashi is okay, except that the plot grows thicker because Rashi says, Shnei Olim Ha'elyonim emtsaim shesham, at that point ha'shidra kola, that's with the termination of the spine, as we call it, of the lulav, v'nechleku zemizeh. So that tiomes gets separate. Instead of being medubakim, it got split. And here's where the plot goes thicker. V'nistika ha'shidra. Rashi adds a piece here, a whole new variable into the equation, and he says that this split was not only on the top of the tiomes, in the two halves of the tiomes that are attached to each other, but the split went all the way down to the shidra itself. And this is going to incur, this is going to generate the curiosity of all of us and all the Achronim. They all want to know what compels Rashi to add a whole new element into the equation, Nistika HaShidra. And not only that, Rashi wants to tell you that this split in the Shidra itself was quite significant. It wasn't just a small split, it was something profound. Ad sheha olim shalamatim, and it reached all the way down to some of the olim hatachtonim. You may recall that in past discussions we said that the olei halulav are divided into the elyonim and the tachtonim. And the tachtonim come out of the side of the shidra, the elyonim come out of the top of the shidra. And not only that, but there are two olim elyonim, which are called the tiomes. They come out all the way where the shidra is kolah, where the shidra completely terminates. And Rashi says that the suffix of Rav Papa of Nechleka Tiomes was not just because the tiomes itself was split, but that split went all the way down and penetrated into the zone, if you will, of the shidra. The shidra itself was split all the way down to the olim. Now, when we read the Gemara itself, we don't get this impression at all. The Gemara has mentioned that this split went all the way down to the Shidra. And if Rashi adds something to the Gemara, which hopefully he always does, because otherwise he doesn't have to repeat what the Gemara said, then obviously Rashi wants to set the record straight about something. You know, somebody wrote a book once on Rashi HaLetor. It's called What Bothers Rashi? So it would be interesting to write a book like that on Shas. You know, that would be a fascinating, you know, Kabbalah, if somebody would Kabbalah on themselves to answer the question, what bothers Rashi? In the Mir Yeshiva, for example, the Rosh Yeshiva's name is Rav Asher. He is an expert on asking this question, what bothered Rashi? He can literally spend a full shiur. His name is Rav Asher Arieli. Has anybody heard of him?
Yeah.
So he could spend a whole shiur just on what bothered Rashi. His father-in-law, who was Rosh Yeshiva in the Mir, Rav Nachum, was also like that. But it's amazing, because how many people do you think sit in the shiur?
600
people. Now, they're not all in one room. They have, you know, they're able to listen in various rooms. You can imagine 600 students in the Mir Yeshiva. They're pretty advanced students. And they're listening to a shiur, what bothers Rashi? I mean, he doesn't ask it in that way. But that's really what the essence of the shiur is. So we get away with murder because we read the Rashi and we go on. But in this case, we're not going to get away with murder because Rashi just jumps at you and he says, Nistaka Ashidra. I mean, it's a whole new element that Rashi is introducing into the equation. Now, in order to begin, at least begin to understand Rashi, we have to focus not on the Shidra for a second, but on the word Nistaka. Because the word nistika is not appearing here for the first time. And here we have to turn back to Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. And here we're going to see this concept of nistak, in terms of the lulav, in its, what I say, its original form. And that's going to be on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis Avi, towards the end of the Amud. And we're talking about a statement of Rav Huna. Rav Huna, two lines up from the bottom of Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, starts with saying Lo Shanu on the last line. Lo Shanu means that the Mishnah tells us that Niktav Rosho Shel Lulav, that means the head, the top of the Lulav was broken off, is possible. The Lulav is possible. The Mishnah at the beginning of Perek Lulav HaGozel enumerates an entire list of Psule Lulav, one of which is Niktam Rosho. And Rav Huna wants to be Medayik, and he wants to say that the Psul is only in a very extreme case, we'll call it a profound case, where the Lulav lost its head. However, Aval Nistak, but if the Lulav was split, Kosher. Now this is a bit surprising to us, because if Rav Huna says that Nistak is kosher, we wonder why Rav Papa here on Daf Lamed Beis is confused, so to speak. He's vacillating back and forth about Nechlekat Yomis. So one could have argued that maybe Nistak doesn't refer to the Tiomis. After all, Rav Huna doesn't say Nistak HaTiomis. If Rav Huna would have said Nistak HaTiomis kosher, and Rav Papa has a tzad to say that Nechlekat Tiomis possible, we've got a real problem. That would be a head-on collision. So we could get away with it and say that maybe what Rav Huna is referring to here when he says Nistak is not the Tiomis itself. And that would have, in a sense, circumvented our whole problem here in comparing Rav Huna's Nistak Kosher with Rav Papa's Nechlekat Yomis Posel. Again, Rav Papa doesn't say Nechlekat Yomis Posel. He vacillates back and forth. But he allows and he recognizes one possibility that Nechlekat Yomis is Posel. Well, why is Nechlekat Yomis different than Nistak, which Rav Huna says is Kosher? So the answer is going to be that Rav Huna is not referring to Nistak. I'm sorry, let me take that back again. That Rav Huna is not referring to Nistak HaTiomis, I meant to say. The only problem is that Rashi, in a sense, if you pardon the phrase, has boxed himself into a corner over here, because take a look at how Rashi interprets the word Nistak back on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis in the Sugya Rav Huna. And this is three lines up before the end of the Omid in Rashi. Rashi says, Nistak, Nistaku Rashi Ha'olim. Now, Rashi Olim seems to indicate that which Olim are we talking about?
The upper ones.
The upper ones. We're talking about the Olim, and Rashi uses the plural. It doesn't mean that one of the, you know, there may be many different Olim that are on the top half of the Lulav, coming out of the top half of the Shidra, but Rashi doesn't isolate one particular Olim, but rather he says Rashi Olim, which seems to imply that Rashi is talking about
the whole lot.
The whole lot, this whole membership club of the Rosh Lulav, you know, the head of the Lulav. There are many Olim in the head of the Lulav, and Rashi assumes that Nistak Rosh HaOlim. Now, if Nistak Rosh HaOlim, who would be the prime, let's say the president who would preside over this membership club?
The Tiamis.
It's very hard to explain that Rashi means to say that Nistak Rosh HaOlim except for the Tiamis. It sounds like Rashi is saying Nistak Kol Rosh HaElyon. Again, he doesn't add the word Kol. That's our literary license that we're adding the word Kol. But Rashi doesn't differentiate between, you know, one particular Ola and the other. He just talks about the Olim that belong to this group, this very select group. We call it depending upon your favorite yeshiva, you know, the select yeshiva. Those are the yeshivas where they put the first, you know. Like, for example, I learned in Yavne. We didn't say the Yavne, but there are other yeshivas where you have to add the word the. Okay, somebody figured out which yeshiva I had in mind. But I'm not going to mention it because, you know, it might insult some people who went to the yeshiva. So Rashi's referring to the Rosh HaElyon, the Rosh HaLulav. He calls it Rosh HaOlim. Rashi HaOlim, if you had a diagram of the lulav, you know, it's like a skeleton kind of thing with the spine of the lulav going up to the rush, to the head. The head is the Rashi HaOlim. And Rashi says the head was chopped off. That's called Niktam Rosho. Or, in the case of Rav Huna, it's only Nistak. So in the case of Rav Huna, we have a mitigating circumstance that sort of, in a sense, comforts us, because after all, Rav Huna is going to say it's kosher. And Rav Huna says, because there's a fundamental difference between the mission of Niktam Rosho and the case of what?
Nistak.
But Rashi says Nistak means Rosho. You know, just like in the case of Niktam, and again, Rav Huna is just making a qualification of Niktam. He's limiting and restricting Niktam. So Niktam means Niktam Rosho shel Lula. And that's possible. So the head of the Lulav was broken off. And as a result, the Lulav is possible. Now Rashi tells us in Rav Huna that it wasn't Niktam Rosho, it was just what?
Nistak.
But Rashi again identifies this as Rosho, Rosho Olin. And that would presumably include the whole top set of Olim on the top of the Lulav. And that's going to be kosher, even though it includes which? The Tiomis. Is Rabosai, is it possible to suggest that Rashi wanted to obviate this problem? Again, let's go over the problem. There seems to be an absolute head-on collision between Rav Huna on Daf Lamed Alpha and Beis and Rav Papa on Daf Lamed Beis and Aleph. Whereas Rav Huna says that Niktam Rosho, but it's not Niktam in Ketsu, instead it was split. It was Nistak Rosho. And he says that's kosher. Rav Papa has a tzad, he's not definite about it, to say that Nechlukat Tiomes is possible. Why should Nechlukat Tiomes be possible if in the case of Nistak Rosho Olim, it's kosher according to Rav Huna? And the Gemara doesn't blink about this. The Gemara doesn't stand up and object against Rav Papa and say, Rav Papa, why do you have a suffix about this? Rav Huna is already committed to the position that Nistak Rosh HaOlim, even though the head, the top Olim on the top of the Lulav are split, nevertheless, the Lulav is kosher. The Gemara doesn't object and say, Rav Papa, how can you possibly raise the possibility that Nechlukat Tiomes is possible if Nistakat Tiomes is possible? Again, as I said a million times, it doesn't say anywhere Nistakat Tiomes according to Rav Huna is kosher. It just says that Nistak Rosh HaElyon, Rosh halulav is kosher. Again, when I say Rosh, I mean to say that the Mishnah says that what? Niktav Rosho is possible, and Rav Huna says, but if the Rosh was not subject to Niktav, you know, the head wasn't chopped off, so to speak, but rather it was split, a split head is better than no head at all, and therefore it's kosher. But now we're talking about a split in the Rosh HaOlim, which would include what? The Tiyomis. If Rashi is aware of that question, you know, again, I started this year with the question, what bothered Rashi? If maybe this is what bothered Rashi, then what was Rashi's possible solution to this problem? Rashi introduces another element, another variable into the equation of Rav Papa. Rav Papa's not talking about Nistak and that's it. The Rosh HaOlim, or in this case, the Tiyomis was Nistak. Rashi says what, John? Nistakaha Shidra. That again, Rashi is pulling a rabbit out of a hat over here, because Vushtate, where does it say in the Gemara that it was Nistakaha Shidra? But at least, I mean, that question I'm not sure I can answer, but what I can answer is not a linguistic question, but at least on a logical basis, what forced Rashi to reinterpret the Gemara that the case of Nechlaka HaTiyomis is not just that the Tiyomis was split, but even what? Even the Shidra was split. Now Rashi says the following, Dr. Cholli, the floor is yours in just a second. To summarize, what we're saying is the following, that although Nistika, as Rav Huna already is committed to tell us back on Daf Lamed Aleph base, is not going to passel the lulav, but what happens, that's where Puff is vacillating back and forth, if it's not only Nistika Rosh HaOlim, but it's also Nistika HaShidra. If that Tzedek was so profound that it traveled all the way down to the Shidra, and Rashi says there was a profound change in the Shidra itself, that it reached all the way to the Olim Lamata. Dr. Chol?
Rav Papa's question, Rav Huna already said this is kosher, so what's Rav Papa
His account's a long Rav Papa, and he asks the following. This is the way Rashi seems to prevent the sugi. If it was just Nichlaka, if just the Rosh HaOlim, and even the Tiyomis, which is so significant, was Nistika, was Nichlaka, that split, as we saw in Rav Huna, would not pass the Luba. But what happens, this way Rashi seems to present it.
Why isn't that the good way? I mean, that's
right? So here comes Rav Papa, right? Enter stage Rav Papa. And Rav Papa says, well, what happens if not only was the Tiyomis Nistika, but that Tzedek went all the way down until it split what?
The Shidra.
Right.
And here's where Rav Papa vacillates back and forth. Perhaps Nistika per se, if it was only limited to the Rosh HaOlim in Rav Huna's frame of reference, or to the Tiyomis, that would still be kosher. It's still within the green line, if you follow me. We haven't passed to the red line, so there's no psul. But what happens if we go a little bit beyond that? Not only was there Nistika on the top of the Olah, splitting it as it were in two, but it also impacted on what?
The Shedra.
On the Shedra.
Would that be possible? What he did.
Oh, so you knew that even before I came into Shia. So you could have said the Shia for me. I mean, I worked on this for about 10 hours, but, you know, that's okay. Dr. Joel's a lot more advanced than I am. I mean, I came into Shia wondering, where did Rashi get Nistika Shidra from? It doesn't say in the Gemara Nistika Shidra. So Dr. Joel knew the answer. And the answer is because Rashi tried to reconcile Rav Papa with Rav Huna, and therefore Rashi was compelled to add an element into the sugya that doesn't say any, there's no hint to this in the Gemara. But Rashi had no choice, because Rashi couldn't accept that Rav Papa was undermining Rav Huna. The Gemara never posits any sort of contradiction between Rav Huna and Rav Papa. It must be that Rav Huna is talking about a different kind of Nechlaka than we thought. We thought he was talking about Nechlaka HaTiyomis, and that's the first there for Rashi, which means that the Tiyomis is an Olam which has two different Olam, that a Medu Bakim Zebes, and he split and separated those, that Olam into two. Comes along Rashi, he says, don't stop here, because if you're only going to have that interpretation, you're going to stop in the Reisha without the Sefer, then you're in trouble. Because then it's a head-on collision to whom? To Rav Huna. But if we add another element into the equation, says Rashi, namely what? Nistika Shidra. Now there's a much more profound change in the tzuras halulav, in the appearance of the lulav, in the wholesomeness of the lulav, in its natural state. Maybe now even Rav Huna would agree that it became pasuk.
Just so that I understand, when we're talking about nistak, is that the way we understand it, is a crack, or are we talking about
what we call a split,
a mamish split?
Okay, so now Rav Gedalia is raising the question: how much of a split is a split?
I'll tell you why I'm asking. Also, because I'm trying to understand the concept here. What's so important? Is it the tiyomes that also ends up being split at the shidra? What would happen if the shidra split, but the tiyomes is still intact?
Right. Oh. So I'm not sure in what seder I should answer all your comments, because I can start from the sefer. I'm much more interested in the sefer and the resha, but my cerebral cognitive part of my brain tells me I should start with your first question, because otherwise I'm not building up to a climax, so to speak. But let me just make a quick decision about the seder at Dvarim.
You can vote.
Okay. All right, so I'm really risking something here, but I'll take the risk. Rav Gedalia's second point is the following. Rashi never says that Nistaka HaShidra is possible. Under what circumstances does Rashi say that Nistaka HaShidra might be possible, according to one side of Rav Papa, only together with Nechlaka Tiyomis? The implication in Rashi is that whatever the nature of this nistika is, and that's Rav Gedalia's first question, which we'll get back to in just a minute, how bad is bad? How profound was this nistika? Rashi seems to assume that it may be a very long split, you know, in terms of length, you know, from the height perspective, but it's not so profound. And what do I mean by it's not so profound? I'm going to show you a Tosus in Bava Kamma who's going to assume that Rashi by Nistaka Shidra means that the Shidra is just completely wrecked. I mean, it's mamish in two pieces. But my claim is, before we see the Tosfos, is that it can't be so. What do I mean? Rashi never says, and I can't repeat this more than a million times and say I wasted your time. You have to repeat this over and over again. Rashi never says that Nistaka Shidra is possible.
He never says it.
Never says it, Avi. He only says that Nistaka HaShidra is a problem when it's a tag on, when it's a continuation of Nechlaka HaTiyomis. So you have his Nechlaka HaTiyomis up on top, and then it hits down to the Shidra. And now Rashi, this is going to be the exciting part of Shia today, I hope, if the Shia is successful, is to ask the following question. Rashi has a mathematical arithmetic addition here that makes no sense whatsoever. Let me explain. On the one hand, Rashi says Nechlaka Tiyomis. On the other hand, Rashi says you have to add Nistaka HaShidra. Now, in simple arithmetic terms, we have the following principle, and I hope everybody will agree with this. 0 + 0 = 0. Okay, can we sing that all together just for myself? 0 + 0 = 0. And the first time I heard this was in Rav Soloveitchik's class, believe it or not. We were talking about the sugya of Kinyani Gzela in Bava Kamma, and the Rav said to us, he doesn't understand, until he said the shir, and to answer this question, why is it that there's what's called a combination of Gzela plus Shinu Rishus, and then he's Kona. He says, if Gzela itself is not enough to be Kona, and if Shinui Rishus itself is not enough to be Kona, so 0 + 0 = 0. I still remember this. This is Varnish from my youth. I'm going to apply that same methodology here. Rashi seems to assume, in order to reconcile Rav Papa with Rav Huna, that Nechlaka HaTiyomis itself would not pass the Lulav. On the other hand, Rashi never says that Nistaka HaShidra would pass the Lulav. So Rashi now combines two different factors, two different variables together, neither of which, in and of itself, would be enough to pass the Lulav. But he says you add the two together, and now the Lulav is so profoundly changed that it might be possible according to Rav Papa.
Might be.
Yeah, keep in mind, Rav Papa vacillates back and forth. We're going to soon see that his final maskana is Eina Chinami, it is possible. But we're not ready for that yet. That's going to be after the Toshva. But right now, Rav Huna was vacillating. There was a point in Rav Huna's life, I promise you this, Rav Papa's life, where he didn't know what the answer to this question. What is the status of Nechukat Yomis, which Rashi says means, in addition to Nechukat Yomis, Nistakar Shidra? And you could say that Nechlekat Yomis itself, Rashi says, would not be enough to push us over the precipice, and it would be possible, and Nistakar Shidra would not be enough to push us over the red line, it would be possible. But somehow the combination of those two together causes an explosion, and all of a sudden the lulav becomes possible. But, you know, that doesn't satisfy the intellectual curiosity of the mind, you know, to say that, yeah, you have this in and of itself wouldn't possible, and this in itself, so each one of them is kind of harmless and innocuous, but you put them together, it's like, I remember I was once researching the laws of Yichud, you know, that a man and a woman are not allowed to be alone in the same place. So I saw one of the poskim, he says the following, well, you know, if there's a young girl there besides this woman that you're alone with, some people might say it's mutter, but it's not mutter. And then some people might say, well, if the door is closed but it's not locked, some poskim would say it's mutter. And if you have both of them together, then for sure it's mutter. Meaning, on the one hand, he's saying that the girl is not old enough to be what we call a chaperone and remove yichud. At the same time, he's saying the fact that the door is closed but not locked, that itself would not be alone to be mater. But if you put them all together, then he came up and he said it was mater. So I asked the question, 0 + 0 = 0. So before we get into this, we'll get back to Rav Gedalia's first question now. Exactly how profound was Nistaka? So here we have a short Tosfos that, believe it or not, appears in Bava Kama Daf Tzadi Vav Amud Beis. So if anybody wants to make a note of it, the sugya of Nechleka Hatyomes appears in two places. It appears here in Sukkah on Daf Lamed Beis, and it also appears in Bava Kama on Daf Tzadi Vav. And Tosis here says the following. Matzari, the Ri is one of the Balei Tosfos, b'tshuvas ha-ga'onim, nitla hat-yomes. Okay, so before we see the tshuvas ha-ga'onim, let's go back to our Gemara for a second, because I think I mentioned this Tosfos a little bit prematurely. The Gemara says the following. Toshma, the Amar of Yeshua ben Levi nitla hat-yomes posel. Rav Yeshua ben Levi addresses a different scenario than that of Rav Papa, where the tiomis was surgically removed. It wasn't split, but it's completely gone. And now the Gemara has two lishonos. There's the Lishna Kama and the Ika de Amri, the Lishna Basra. What should we derive from Rav Yeshua ben Levi? So the Lishna Kama says, well, nitla tiomis is much more profound than Nechleka Atyomis. Rav Yeshua ben Levi only said that the lulav is possible when Nitla Atyomis. Everybody have that?
Yeah.
So why did he limit himself to the case of Nitla Atyomis? So one side of the Gemara says, you know what? Nitla Atyomis is just a method by which Rav Yeshua ben Levi is conveying the special nature of the Tiyomis, and the Tiyomis has to be intact. Here it was removed. So the Gemara thinks, my love, in the first Lishna, the Gemara says, well, maybe Hu Adin Nechleka. Maybe even Nechleka would be included because you upset the Tiyomis. So Gemara says, no, that's not the way we should read Rav Yeshua ben Levi. If Rav Yeshua ben Levi wanted to tell me that anything that upsets the Tiyomis is absolutely disqualifies the lulav, he should have told me a bigger chiddush. He should have told me that what? That not only nitla atyomis is possible, but even if the tiyomis is still there, it's just not intact because it was split, it's also possible. And therefore the Gemara says the following, that lo, don't tell me that hu adin nechleka, but rather nitla shiny, the hachaser le, because the tiyomis is completely gone. So according to the Lishna Kama, the final conclusion to Rav Papa's dilemma would be that Nechleka Tiyomis would be what? Okay. Kosher. And the only case that's possible, Rabbi Shimon Levi would say, is only the case of Nitla Tiyomis. But now let's take a look at the Ikar D'Amri. This is the second Lishna of the Gemara. And the second Lishna of the Gemara says the following. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Nechlaka Tiyomis, there's a whole different version, the second version. And now Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi explicitly addresses the case of Rabbi Papa, namely Nechlaka HaTiyomis. Nasa Kemisha Nitla HaTiyomis Upos. He postulates an equation between Nechlaka and Nitla. Just as Nitla is possible, so too Nechlaka is possible. So let's take a look now at the Tshuvas HaGaonim, which is quoted here by Tosfos in Bava Kamma. And he says the following. Matzo Reba Tshuvas HaGaonim, Nitla HaTiyomis, Oso Hutza, that leaf, HaElyon, which is on the top of Rosh HaLulav, and Ein Hutza L'malim, that's the real top. And who, he describes the Tiyomes as Shnei Hutzim, it's like two leaves, Dvukim Zebazeh, sounds very similar to Rashi. Vinikraim Tiyomes, it's considered like, we called it Siamese twins that are attached to each other. And then he goes on and he quotes our Rashi, and he says the following. He says, after quoting the whole Rashi, the Nechlaka Tiyomes, Shneol Milyonim, Shasham Kol HaShidra, Nechlaka Mezev, Zev, Nistaga HaShidra, Ara Olam Lamata, Mehem Mitoch Perusha. This is the addition of Tosfos to Rashi. Mashma would seem from Rashi, She Nistaga HaShidra, and now he adds five words. Kolkach, what does Kolkach mean?
Somewhat
profoundly, you know, it wasn't just a little split. Shenirim ha'olim ha'elyonim chalukim umefuzarim zemizeh. In other words, the top part of the lulav, those olim ha'elyonim are attached to the lulav at the shidra. Once the shidra is split to such an extent, then it's almost like you have two shidros. It's like you have two spines. And the language of Tosfos here, and this is, he's explaining Rashi, mashma mitoch perusho, that the Olim Elyonim now look like they're mefuzarim, they're separated, and spread apart one from the other. Now, Rabosai, honestly, again, you'll shoot me for saying this, I didn't see this in Rashi. I looked in Rashi, and Adarabba, Rashi, if Rashi wants to tell us something as far-reaching as what Tosfos says, Nistakar Shidra means that the Olim look mefuzarim zemizeh. Rashi could have told me that. What I'm applying is the rule of Ikar Chosim min HaSefer. You know, Rashi doesn't leave us in the dark. You know, if the Rashi wants to tell us that this Nistakar Shidra, which by the way is not even mentioned in the Gemara at all, was so profound to the extent in which that the Olim HaMefuzarim Zemizeh, that's how Nistaka is. That's how far-reaching Nistaka is. I think Rashi should have said this. So Rabosai, on the one hand, let me tell you the good news. Again, when I say good news, this is just very subjective. This is the way I see it. The good news in Tosfos is that Tosfos is emphasizing the Rashi about Nistaka Shidra. It didn't go unnoticed. And perhaps the reason why Tosfos wants to notice those words of Nistaka Shidra is to answer the question that we posed at the beginning of our discussion today. How do we reconcile this with the Nistaka of Rav Huna? And the answer is because Nistaka Rav Huna was only on the Olim and not on the Shidra. And that's what Rashi wants to emphasize. That's the good news. The bad news, for me personally, is that Tosfos, I think, took this too far. Meaning, Tosfos was bothered, well, Nistaka shouldn't, you know, Nistaka Tiyomis should not in and of itself pass the lulav, because Rav Huna says that Nistak is kosher. So it must be that there was something really, really profound that changed the whole nature, the whole appearance of the lulav. And when Rashi says Nistaka Shidra, he means it split the lulav in half. It's almost like you have two different lulavim over here, to such an extent that Tosfos says, "Ha olim mefuzarim zemizeh." This bothers me because although I agree with Tosfos' problem, I empathize. You know, we have to somehow reconcile, you know, Nechlaka HaTiyomis with Nistak in Rav Huna, and no doubt that Rashi's trying very hard to do that by adding the element of Nistaka Shidra. But nowhere does Rashi tell me that it was Nistakar Shidra to such an extent that the Olam are completely separated one from the other. Mefuzarim Zemizel. And I'll tell you why this bothers me. Not only because Iker Chasim and Asefer, but I come back to my original point. Forget about the Tiyomis. This is what Rav Gedalia, I think, was asking. Tell me if I understood you correctly. That, let's say, he would take a razor and he would somehow avoid the top of the olive, you know, the Tiyomis itself, and he would cut the Shidra to such an extent that it looks like two shidros, almost like this being, this lulav has two spines to it. It's a two-spine lulav. I would have said to you, again, this is all very subjective, that in such a case, the lulav is possible.
Meaning,
I don't need the A plus B equation of Rashi. B alone would have, in and of itself, passed the lulav. If you're talking about such a radical change in the shidra, you know, the shidra of a lulav is a very, very crucial part of the lulav. And now, and it's meant to keep the olim together, right? That's what we call kafus, if you remember that discussion of last week. Then, if you split it to such an extent that now the olim are just mefuzarim zemizeh, v'chalukim zemizeh, that's the language of Tosis, then that itself should pass the lulav. So, in a funny sort of sense, I'm saying that Tosis went too far. Meaning, I understand why we need to add the Nistakar Shidra to the equation, because we can't just stop up on top of the lulav and say Nechlok Atyos. Yeah, we got to go down into the heart of the lulav, into the Shidra of the lulav. But don't go too far with it, because at the moment you go too far, you're going to have a new sugya here, which is called Nistakar Shidra. And it could very well be that Nistakar Shidra is possible and has nothing whatsoever to do with Nechlok Atyos. So now you're really rewriting the text of the Gemara. You know, I'll reshot him on a mitzvah. You know, I have enough trouble trying to push Nistakar Shidra into the limelight of the sugya, into the surface of the sugya. But to go a step further and say the whole sugya now becomes a sugya of Nistakar Shidra, that's a lot. That's too much to swallow. Go ahead, Don.
Yesterday you said that in talking about the reconciliation of Rashi, that A alone and B alone is not enough. You need A plus B,
right,
which seemed
right
to indicate that the split in Shidra would still make it kosher.
Correct.
Now, you're saying the opposite, though.
No, I'm saying to you the following. Here's Tosfos in Bava Kamma. Okay? And Tosfos Bava Kamma says that the Shidra was split in this case of Rav Papa to such an extent that the Oli Aluav are Chalukim Umefuzarim Zemizeh. You tell me Pshat in this Tosis. I can't figure this out. Because I would tell you that if Tosis is Pshat and Rashi is correct, not only did Rashi forget, he omitted to tell me this whole story, but moreover, that has nothing to do with the Tiyomis. That would pass the lulav in and of itself because of the Shidra. Therefore, I'm going to substitute for Tosis a different Pshat and Rashi. And again, it's a free country. There's no kfiyat datit here in this classroom. And I'm going to say that Rashi didn't mean what Tosfos says he means. Rashi means there was a split in the Shidra, but it wasn't such a profound split that all of a sudden the lulav looks like it was cut in half and the olim are jumping around to the right and to the left, the chalukim umefuzar.
Maybe he didn't look at the Shidra until he only started examining the lulav a little bit more closely because of this issue at the top, and only when he's
right.
No.
So maybe we'll find that out tomorrow. I don't know if Chaim is going to bring his magnifying glass tomorrow. We'll see. Okay. So, Rabosa, I have a shtickle Torah here that I want to say, and again, as I say always, you'll decide whether you like it or you don't like it. Obviously, I'm very excited about it. My Talmidim used to always say that as soon as I stand up from my chair, they know I'm about to do. They used to call it in Mevasera, I was Rosh Yeshiva 18 years. They used to call it the Berzon's Lomdish Dance. That's what they used to call it. So I want to say the following. You may recall that a week or two ago we mentioned the Rosh. The Rosh says about Psulei Lulav that Masran HaKosuv LeChachamim. And again, you know, the reason why the Rosh is compelled to come up with this radical chiddush that the Torah doesn't exactly spell out at what point a lulav or an esrog is possible, and it gave it over to the chacham, to the authority to do that, is because the Rosh is bothered by a sugya called shas adchak. And the way the Rosh understood it, and the tour, and many, many poskim, and it's even brought in Shulchan Aruch, that b'shas adchak, something that's possible, becomes kosher. And he, the Rosh, couldn't understand how that works. You can't take something that's possible and make it kosher. So he introduces this concept called Masron HaKosov L'Chachom. So I want to suggest the following. Again, this is for your thought and your analysis to see if you could agree with this. What did the Chachomim do with Psulei Lulav? How did they approach the whole sugya of Psulei Lulav? And I want to suggest that they approached it from two different vantage points, two different perspectives.
Yeah.
One perspective is what I call a chalos al pi din. What I mean by a chalos al pi din is a legal category which they invented. The other approach was the appearance in reality, what I call the mitzius, of the lulav, the esrog, and the other two mina. What gives me this chutzpah, this audacity, to say that maybe in the context of psulei lulav, there's something called a chalos psul al pi din, some sort of legal status? So what I want to suggest is that the lulav could be seen in two ways. One way is to isolate different parts of the lulav. I'll get back to that in just a second. And the other way is to look at the lulav as a whole. Right? We'll call it a capital W, a whole. An entirety, an entity as a totality. Like, for example, in biological terms, the human body is a whole. It's an organism. It's made up of different parts that function together. Some are more critical, some are more vital, some are less vital. That's the classical way of looking at a lulav or an esrog. Look at all of its parts as a whole. When you do so, then you're interested in something called hadar, for example, right? Because the Torah calls an esrog a priates hadar. And now you want to see the beauty of the esrog, and maybe even the beauty of a lulav, right? In terms of its wholeness. But then there's another halach. And here, what the Chachamim did was they pinpointed specific parts of the lulav. Again, when we say lulav, we could apply it in Birtz Hashem to the Hadassim, when we get to Hadassim, and maybe to the Esrog. And what I'm suggesting is that those parts of the lulav, when we take apart the lulav, you know, take it apart into its components, there are certain vital parts of the lulav, and there's certain secondary parts of the lulav. And when I say vital, I don't mean in a biological sense. I mean al pi din, they're vital parts of the lulav. And if you undermine the vital parts of the lulav, the primary lulav, then the halacha becomes very, very strict about it. Why? Because those vital parts have a certain chashivus to them, a certain significance to them. And that significance defines the entire lulav. So, for example, if I were to tell you that the human body has one part, you know, which, yeah, I'm looking for a part that starts with the Yiddish phrase, the Yiddisha, and ends with another word, right? A part of the human body that has special vital significance, that really defines a person, what would it be?
The cup, right?
The cup, right? The Yiddish cup. So I'm gonna apply the same word to a lulav. There's something called the lulav's dikka cup. I probably didn't say it in the right way, but the cup of the lulav. In Hebrew, that would be what? The Rosh HaLulav. The Rosh HaLulav is untouchable, so to speak. It has a certain specific status, and it's vital, and halachically al pi din, it has to have its chashivus. So here's what I want to suggest Rav Papa's vacillation. Rav Papa doesn't know the following. The Tiomes is the Rosh HaLulav. It's the head of the head. That's where the Shidra ends up, all the way on top. And Rav Papa says the following. If you behead the Lulav, Right, in modern context, we shouldn't talk about these things because we know our enemies are into that kind of stuff, right? But if you behead the lulav, then for sure the lulav is possible. Even if it doesn't make such a radical change in what I call the wholesomeness of the lulav as a totality, meaning it could be that if you surgically remove the top, the head of the lulav, which would be the tiyomes, it could very well be that there are other olim that in a sense camouflage that. And it might not be so apparent that nikar to the ayin in terms of the wholeness of the lulav. But it doesn't matter. But Papa would say that's possible. Why? Because you've undermined the rush halulav. And the rush halulav, even if it is isolated as a separate part of the lulav, is vital, it's primary, it's untouchable. Comes along with Papa and he says the following. What do we do in the case of Nechlaka HaTiyomis? On the one hand, the Tiyomis still exists. On the other hand, it's not exactly the Tiyomis that I wanted. It's got a split. The Tiyomis is meant to be two leaves that are Dvukim Zelazeh. That's the greatness of the Tiyomis, and maybe other leaves have that too. But this is the top leaf that goes out of the Shidra, but Mokum Shashidra Kola, Rashi says. And now you're messing around with my rush, with my Tiyomis. But it still is a tiyomis. A dying shame tiyomis aleha. The rush halulav still exists. And here a papa wants to know what happens if you undermine the perfect tiyomis by impinging on its perfectness, by diminishing its beauty, by removing the dveikus, so to speak, of these Siamese twins. And he holds there's no chashivus to such a tiyomis. Comes along Rav Papa and he says the following. On the one hand, I have a tiyomis. The rush halulav still exists. But it's not perfectly intact. And therefore, it's lacking in chashivus. Says Rav Papa, if it's lacking in chashivus, it might be that you've undermined that chashivus of the rush halulav. Comes on Rashi and he says, I don't get it. Because if a papa is presenting the possibility that even nechlaka tiyomis means that you've impinged and impaired upon the rush halulav by removing its chashivus, it's not intact. And therefore the lulav might be possible. Again, keep in mind, Phil, Rav Papa is vacillating about it at this point. Then what are we going to do with Rav Huna? Because Rav Huna said that Nistika is like Niktam Rosho, and it refers to all the Olam Elyonim. So Rashi gives the following answer. We have something that could substitute for the Rosh Halulav and could step into the shoes of the Rosh Halulav. What's that?
The Tiyomis.
No, the Tiyomis, again, the Tiyomis now is no longer the Rosh Halulav. Why? Because it's a second-rate Tiyomis. You've defizzed it, so to speak. You know, it's like pulling the air out of the balloon. It doesn't have the chashivus. If it doesn't have the chashivus, it can't have that status of the vital, you know, that vital primary part of the lulav. Ein ochinami, in terms of the lulav as a whole, nishke ferolav. You know what? Like you say, Phil, you might have to take out your magnifying glass to see if there's a split in the tiyomis. It's not apparent to the eye, so the wholeness of the lulav is still maintained. And in terms of the mitzias of hadar and tzurus halulav, we're fine. But the problem is, now I have a rush halulav that can no longer be looked up to, pardon the pun, as a rush halulav. Because it has no chashivas as a rush halulav. It's already been impaired, so to speak. It's already been damaged. I have a Rosh Halulav, but it's not a Rosh Halulav of Alpi Din. Comes along Rav Papa, and he says, you know what? This lulav still has a Rosh Halulav. And what is that? A Shidra. The Shidra now becomes the Rosh Halulav. And Rav Papa pulls a really sharp move over here, and he says that the Shidra now steps into the shoes of the Tiyomis as a replacement Rosh Halulav. No. So if that be the case, then open shut case. The lulav is certainly kosher. Why? Because even you're telling me that the tiyomis can't serve the function as the rosh halulav, the shidra can serve the function as the rosh halulav. What's Rashi's answer? Nistaka Hashidra. Rashi says we got another problem over here. And the problem is that you cannot appoint the Shidra as the substitute for the Tiomes and filling the role of the Rosh Ha, the Rosh Ha Halula, because it too is lacking Hashivus. Why is the Shidra lacking Hashivus? Because Nistaka. Now we're in trouble. Says Rav Papa, in one side, we can explain the other side too. The lulav is possible. Why? Because Mimanav Shach, there's no Rosh HaLulav. There's no Rosh HaLulav because the Hashivas of the original Rosh HaLulav, the Tiomis, was removed. It was Batel of Avutal. There's no Rosh HaLulav because you can't substitute the Shidra for the Tiomis and appoint the Shidra as the replacement. You know, they're like the vice president. If some Chas V'Shalom happens to the president, I think in American law, the vice president becomes president until the election. Am I right? Yeah. So now the vice president is the Shidra. And now the Shidra steps up to the plate and replaces the Tiomis as the Rosh HaLulav. But then I have the following condition. Just like we said in terms of the Tiomes, that it could only be considered a Rosh HaLulav if it has Chashivas to it. Nistaka removes that Chashivas, so too I'm going to apply the same yardstick to the Shidra as the substitute. It also has to have Chashivas, and the Shidra has its own Chashivas. It plays the role of keeping the Lulav together, but now you split the Shidra. Once you split the Shidra, you've now removed the Chashivas from the Shidra. And Arab Papa in one side wants to suggest me, Manav Shach, you don't have a Rosh HaLulav. If you only knocked off the Tiomes, okay. You knocked off the Chashivas of the Tiomes because it was Nechlaka. Fine. That itself would not pass the Lulav. Why? Because we have a fallback position. What's the fallback position? The Shidra. Oh, if you hadn't split the Tiomes and you only had a split in the Shidra, that wouldn't bother me either because the Tzuras HaLulav is still intact. Again, I'm going against Tosfos here. Keep on. But Rashi doesn't mention a word about Nifrizu HaOlim B'Nechluku, right? So what are you left with? You're left with the Tiomes. The Tiomes is intact in this case, right? Because you only split the Shidra. So I have a Rosh HaLulav. And that Rosh HaLulav has Chashivas because you didn't touch the Tiomes. So the split in the Shidra would not bother me per se to pass the Lulav. But when I have the explosive combination of A plus B, then the Marashach, the Lulav, is possible. Because since I've robbed the Chashivas of the Tiomes, because Nechlecha Tiomes, now I move back to my second, you know, my fallback position, and I introduce the Shidra as my Rosh HaLulav, and let that fulfill the requirement of Rosh HaLulav. I can't do that either, because since Nechlecha Nistaka HaShidra, I now have a Shidra which cannot fill the role as the Rosh HaLulav because it itself is lacking in Chashivus by virtue of the fact that it was split. Again, as I said before, each one unto itself would not be a problem because I always have another Rosh HaLulav to fall back on. In the case of Nechlecha Tiomes, I can fall back on the Rosh HaLulav of the Shidra if the Shidra is intact. In the case of Nechlecha Shidra, Nistaka Shidra, I can still consider the Tiomes as considered what? As the Rosh HaLulav. So I've covered my bases as far as Rosh HaLulav. I got that vital Rosh HaLulav. The cup and the Lulav is there. And if you're talking about the Tzuras HaLulav as a whole, Nistaka, as we saw already in Rav Huna, would not undermine the Tzuras HaLulav. So it's not a terrible Lulav. It's within the bounds of a Lulav. The only problem is I need a Rosh HaLulav because there are two halachas in Psu'e Lulav. The halacha requires a Rosh HaLulav as a vital part of the Lulav, and the halacha requires a beauty and a totality and the wholeness of the Lulav. Here I'm okay, as long as I have a Rosh HaLulav. So if it was only Nistaka Tiomes, I have the Rosh HaLulav in the Shidra. If it was only Nistaka Shidra, I have the Rosh HaLulav in the Tiomes. That's up to you whether you like it or not. I mean, I got very excited.
So that would go with the second Ikar, with the Ikar De'am. According to the first part, essentially what we're saying is then if there's just Nechlecha, then it would be okay, and that it's
right.
Not
only
to,
Nitla. And according to the first Lishna of the Gemara, only Nitla, because according to the first Tzad, when Rav Huna went as far as to say that Nistaka is kosher, what he meant to say is that Nistaka doesn't even remove the status as the Rosh HaLulav. And that was the first Lishna of the Gemara. So everything is kosher. But now the Gemara has a new version of Rav Yishuv ben Levi. And according to the Ikar De'Amri, the second Lishna, what did Rav Yishuv ben Levi have to say? That Nechlecha has the same status of Nitla. Now again, I wouldn't equate the two. But he's gaining one thing over here, that just like in Nitla HaTiyomis, you've removed the head. You know, the problem is the Rosh HaLulav comes along Rav Yeshua ben Levi, and he says, Enechleko, you've also, in consequence, removed the Rosh HaLulav. And why is that? Because Nechleko itself is enough to be considered like Nitla in the sense that you've touched and undermined the status of the Rosh HaLulav. Now you're going to fall back to what? To the Shidra? Oh no. The same Mechleko is going to be applicable to the Shidra. Now let me read to you the end of Tosfos here in Bava Kamma, if I still have the Tosfos. Yeah, here it is. The Tosfos says in Bava Kamma, says the following. He says the following, that this Maskana, again, according to Lishna Basra, that Nechleka Tiyomis is possible, is a real headache. Why? He says, after describing a Tiyomis as being perfectly Dovuk Zelizeh, he writes, Umiu Ein Rov Halulavim Hanim Tsoim Ke'inyan Zeh. Now, I'm going to add a little bit of history here that what I'm telling you could be totally wrong. But what I'm going to say is the following. Tosfos lived in an area where they didn't have any local lulavim. And therefore, they had to import lulavim. And again, it's not like today, maybe we have very secure ways of packaging things and sending them by ship or by plane, whatever, by air. But in those days, it was very tricky. The Tiyomis is a very sensitive area, and it's very vulnerable. And Tosfos is saying that we can't find a lulav that's kosher. He's really, really nervous about this. We'll see in a minute exactly how far he goes with this. He says, how are you going to get a lulav? Rov, he says, again, I'll read it again. He says, Rov, Ein rov halulavim nimtzayim ke'inyan zeh. Now Rashi lived pretty much in the same areas of Tosfos. Again, there were various Tosfos that were a little bit more towards Germany, some towards France, you know, and so forth and so on. So I'm going to make the following jump. I'm going to assume that the same problem that bothered Tosfos here about Nechleka Tiyomis bothered Rashi. Meaning, if Nechleka Tiyomis l'maskon, according to the second edition, is possible, we're in deep trouble. Because Rov HaLulavim don't have a Tiyomis that's intact. And I'm going to show you in a minute how far Tosfos went with this. But I think Rashi would not be bothered by this. Why not?
Because it has Tosfos be on the ship.
Exactly. Because Rashi holds that it's not enough. Nechleka Tiyomis, even according to Lishna Basra, is not possible. It's got to have another element into the equation. Namely what?
Shidra.
It's got to be Nistakar Shidra. And Rov HaLulavim might have a problem in the sensitivity of the Tiyomis, but not in the Shidra itself. So Rashi has really, in a sense, answered, he circumvented the problem of Tosfos from the get-go. Tosfos worried about how can you assume that Nechleka Tiyomis is possible? Where are we going to find the Lulav that has a complete whole Tiyomis? It's very rare. Rashi, I think, has already circumvented that problem.
Yeah.
Now, how far did Tosfos go with this problem? Listen to this. Tosfos says, based on this issue, he says, "Kol ole halulav kfulim." In other words, we've been focused a lot on the Tiyomis, that the Tiyomis is kafel, meaning it's made up of two leaves that are clinging, that are adhere to each other. Tosfos says, "Kol ole halulav kfulim, kol echad l'shnayim." So every one of the leaves on a lulav is really two leaves that are connected to each other. Now listen carefully. The yesh barosh halulav, on the top of the lulav, b'sof hashidra, okay, who could fill in the name, you know, write the text. I'm just playing a game with you because Tosfos is about to tell us something totally radical. But if I were to write the text and stop here, v'yesh barosh hashidra, what do we have in Rosh Hashidra?
Shnei olim elyonim
em. Correct. Tell shnei olim elyonim em. Sorry, man. Dvukim zelozeh. Listen to Tosfos. Tosfos says, v'yesh barosh halulav b'sof hashidra, Shnei olim yotzim. There are two olim that go out. They call echad kafel shnai.
Each one is double.
Each one is double. Not the way we said it, that the chovis is that one leaf that goes on the top that's double. He says there are two of them. Now this is going to solve Tosis's problem. Why? Because he's going to tell us that in order for Nechleka Tiomes to be possible, which is the Maskon according to the second Lishna in Rav Papa, what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to separate between those two olive. And he says that that's not an issue. Our problem is the maintaining the dibuk, you know, the adhesion between each one of these who love him that's kafel unto themselves. But he's saying as far as the two lulavim, again, it could be that, the two olim, what I meant to say is that the two olim, each one is kafel, he says, Tosis, they may be, even if you separate them a little, they're still dvukim zelozeh. You know, that would take a more radical patch, you know, if you took the lulav and smacked it on the table, then maybe you would completely sever the connection between the two olim elyonim. Now, I was wondering, let's go back to Rashi and see if we can fit this into Rashi. Yeah, go ahead, Don.
No, I don't understand
conceptually. Until what we've been saying is the
following. No, just the last thing. I don't understand conceptually.
I'm sorry, I have to review the whole thing. Sorry, Don. You ask for a finger, you get a hand. That's the deal. I just want to review the whole spiel. We thought, before we saw Tosfos, that the Tiomis is one leaf that goes from the Chut HaShidra all the way on top. So if you have your lulav, again, hopefully Chaim will point this out tomorrow, you'll see if you put your finger on top, you'll touch the tiyomis. And it's one leaf that's made up of two leaves that are dvukim zelos. And now you split them. So there's going to be a split on the top of the tiyomis. That's what we thought the sugya of Rav Papa was all about with Rashi's edition of Nistika HaShidra. Comes along Tosin and he says, Nay, you don't understand what tiyomis is. Tiomis is not referring to the fact that the leaf is Dovuk Zelazeh, but the fact that there are two leaves that are Dvukim Zelazeh. Each one of those leaves is made up of two leaves. So you got like all told four, but you'll only see two in a normal leaf. And he says that Nechlukat Tiomis means that you split the two top leaves, one from the other. Each leaf remains double. But that doesn't bother me. What bothers me is that these two leaves have to be completely dvukim zebazeh. And the reassumes in Tosfos that that's not such a problem. You know, it's not so matsui, it's not so commonplace to find that in a radical way, through the process of transportation, of sending this overseas, that it would be such that the two olim elyonim are completely separate. So what I'm trying to show you is that Tosfos was so bothered by this problem of Nechlukat Tiomis Pasul that he had, in a sense, to rewrite the text and tell us that that our Lulavim have two Olam Elyonim that together become a Tiomis, and that's less of a common problem for them to be split. Now, the one who notices this is the Aruch HaShulchan. And the Aruch HaShulchan says, Nishtanu Atvoyim. Now, let me give an introduction. I'm a gigantic fan of the Aruch HaShulchan. Again, if I would say this to you, I'd probably have to shut off the tape, but if I had a choice between learning the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, I would prefer learning the Aruch HaShulchan. Okay, for various reasons. The Aruch HaShulchan was a tremendous lamda. And for him to invoke the principle of Nishtanu Atvoyim, that nature has changed over the course of time, and he says that their lulavim were made up of two olim on the top. Our lulavim don't have two lulavim on top. They have only two olim on top. They only have only one olim on the top. That sounds to me very atypical of the Aruch HaShulchan, for anyone who's a little familiar with his writings. But I think that perhaps the Aruch HaShulchan had in mind when he read Rashi here in Sukkah, our Rashi, which I want to reread with you, but don't cheat, don't read it inside here. He had in mind the following Chakira, he had the following mind, this following Suffolk. What is Rashi assuming? Is Rashi assuming that there were two leaves on top that split, or there's one leaf of top on top, that's a Tiomis, and that's made up of a Tiomis, of a Dibuk, meaning he came to the table with Tosis in his back pocket, and Tosis says there are two olim on top. That's why we can still salvage our lulavim, says Tosis. What did Rashi have in mind? Yesh lachkar, yesh listapik, I don't know. Did Rashi have in mind one olah going up on top or two? So let's take a look at Rashi now.
Essentially, it's one shehin shtayim or shtayim shehin
arba. Yeah, right. Shtayim shehin arba. Excellent. So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says, Nechlakat yomes, shnei olim elyonim emtsayim. Now, both, what does that sound like to you? I mean, we didn't pay any attention to this. At least I didn't. This chatoya, I'm not going to want to project on you. But what does it sound like? It sounds exactly like Tosis, that there are two olim emtsayim. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, I don't understand it. You know, like I looked at a lulav and I didn't see two olam emtsayim, I saw one olam emtsayim. And I learned this sugya of Nechlakat Yomes, that this one olam was split. Again, Tosis says, if that be the case, Shalom Aleichem Moshe, good to see you. We have to get an extra seat for you here. Yeah. I have a seat here, but that would only be appropriate for a different Chas Shalom time of 7 days.
No, that's fine.
Yeah. All right. Hey, you take my chair, because I can stand. No, I can stand.
Asur to sit on the rabbi's chair.
No. Only if I'm Michael, you. Since Rav Shemachal Kvod and Kvod and Michael, I'm not a king here. If I was a king, that would be a problem.
But still, Kvod Torah, Kvod Rabbi.
Don't worry about it. Just sit down and don't make a spiel out of it. Okay. So Tosis says that in order to solve this problem, that our lulavim, says Tosis, are imported from far away, and therefore we have a problem of nechlakat tiomis, that the tiomis is very sensitive, and in the course of transportation, you know, it gets messed up and it's split. How can we be yotz in the midst of lulav? So Tosis comes up with what sounds like a crazy chiddush. That Tosis is so hard pressed based on this situation that he says no, the tiomis is made up of two different leaves that shoot up from the shidra all the way to the top of the lulav. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, I checked it out, and my lulav has only one olah coming up to the top. So with all due respect to Tosis, so he invokes a principle called nishtanu atvoim, that nature has changed. That the lulav, again, it might not be that nature. See, even though he does quote the halacha of the principle of nishtanu atvoim, like for example, the Gemara talks about the size of a kibetza, the size of a kezayis. So the Gemara says that our eggs are smaller than their eggs, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know if that's what he means. He may mean that just geographically, in terms of the proximity to the location in Tosis, in Germany or in France, you know, their lulavim look like that. Our lulavim are grown in a different geographic, meteorological conditions, and therefore we only have one. I don't know. But the bottom line is that he read Rashi and he said to himself that Rashi also talks about Shnei Olim Elyonim. If Rashi meant that it was one Ola that was split into two, Rashi would have said Ola Echad Emtsoi Sheniskal Kol Shtayim. Why does he say Shnei Olim Elyonim? So the Aruch HaShulchan says that Rashi had the same Mitzius, the same double Olim Elyonim Lulavim that Tosis had, because they both lived in the same time and in the same area. Rashi is the first of the Bali Atosis, you know. But I found that pretty radical. What I do like, and Gedalia, the floor is yours, is that according to our understanding of Rashi, it doesn't necessarily mean that Rashi was of the opinion that, you know, we have to introduce new elements into this sugi because otherwise we're in deep trouble, because Nechagat Yomis Pasul is going to pass all of our love. I'm not sure if you have to go that far. Tosis went very far. Maybe we could say, according to Rashi, we need Nistika Hashidra, not because otherwise we won't find the lulav that's kosher, but rather maybe because Rashi held that if it's only Nechlakat Yomis, then it's a contradiction to Rav Huna. Yeah.
I think that based off of the Aruch HaShulchan's understanding of Rashi, it definitely seems to flow for me a little bit better in terms of what Rashi is trying to say. It bothered me, why is Rashi emphasizing Shisham HaShidra Kalev? Who cares? I mean, that's irrelevant.
According to HaShulchan, just invoke Tosis, because otherwise we got no
law. According to the way the Aruch HaShulchan is explaining it, I think now it makes a lot of sense. Essentially, the way we understood it is that there's one Aleh, and then it's Medubak, and then it has to split. So it's enough if it splits a little bit. We didn't understand why Rashi needs to split it all the way up until the Shidra. Right. But according to the way the Aruch HaShulchan is understanding it, essentially Rashi is just telling us as follows. There are two Alin. in order to define that they are split, it's going to have to end up splitting the Shidra.
Oh, in Metzias.
In Metzias, that's what's
going to happen. Because you have to take it all the way
down. So yeah. It has to split, at least split some of the Shidra, because that's where the Shidra is called.
Maybe Rashi is just describing the Metzias.
And then it just seems to...
Okay. Rabbosai. This was all the introduction to Ashir. Now we get to the Shir itself. What I mean by that is not Shir in the sense of a class, but a Shir in the size of a lute. So who can tell me what is the Shir of a lute? Can you go back to the Mishnah? Okay, but Don is going to ask me a question, but I'm asking everyone to turn back to the Mishnah and answer the following question. What is the Shir? Is that what you saw in the Mishnah?
No, I didn't see that. Great.
See, Don is an expert. He knows the final answer. But I was asking...
Class is Joel, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I was asking about state the Mishnah. The Mishnah says three. Okay, we'll get to that in a second.
Still math, three plus one, right? Plus
yeah, he one. Added a one.
Just to go back to clarify. Yeah. I'll go through the whole thing again. because the Tosafot...
You're warning me already, huh?
And possibly Rashi is saying, because it's two leaves, it's not really split.
It might not be split. It might be only partially split. But you can read even if there's tilt like
now,
there.
If it's one leaf, and it appears to be two, it's split, and that's a problem. But if it's really two leaves, each of which are two, but so therefore, my tiomis is not split because it consists of two leaves, which just happen to be a little bit apart.
Correct. Okay. But if you get to the point where the two leaves are absolutely split, with and Rashi ends with the Shidra, that's where
that's the question of it, essentially.
Okay. So again, just to summarize, there are basically two approaches to Rashi's Nistaka Shidra. One is to say that Rashi was addressing a halachic problem, trying to reconcile the stira that seems apparent to be a contradiction between Rav Huna and Rav Pop. The other way of saying it is that Rashi wants to know, like Tosfos wants to know, how do alulavim, which are imported from Italy, how do we maintain their kashrus? Because ultimately the Tiomus is going to be split. So he says, no, that's not the Tiomus. Tiomus is made up of two Om. And the Aruch HaShulchan says, I looked at my Lulav, I didn't see these two Olim. Where are they? So that's what he implies. He invokes the principle of Nishtana Matzvah. Okay, so what's the Shir of a Lulav? Okay. So if you take a look now, turn to Lamed Beis Amid Beis. So I see already you turned the page, that's good. And we're going to count down from the top approximately 10 lines. Approximately. And the first word of the line is lulav. And that's a quote from the Mishnah. Lulav sheyesh bo shlosha tfachim is kosher. That's what it says in the Mishnah. And now the Gemara records a machlokas between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. So let's start with Shmuel. Amrav Yehuda, Amr Shmuel. Don, can you help him out there? It's on Lamed Beis, Amid Beis, 10 lines down from the top.
I had to find it myself.
Okay.
Somewhere else.
Amrav Yehuda, Amr Shmuel. Shir Hadas Varova Shlosha. Okay, that says in the Mishnah that Hadas and Arova each have to be three tefachim high. We're going to have a whole discussion, Mirtz Hashem, what a tefach is, because there are different ways of defining a tefach. The lulav arba, and now we have to add to the lulav a fourth tefach. Kideshi he lulav yotze min hadas tefach. Since the hadas is how many tefachim?
Four.
No, the hadas is three. The lulav has to be beyond the hadas by one tefach. So Shmuel has this equation of 3 plus 1 equals 4. Okay, the Gemara is about to attack Shmuel from our Mishnah. The Mishnah says the lulav is 3 tefach. But before we get to that, let's introduce Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Parnach Omar Rabbi Yochanan, he quotes Rabbi Yochanan as saying the following, Shidro shalulav tzarech sheyetze min hadas tefach, that the Shidra itself has to rise above the hadas by one tefach. So it could be, according to Rabbi Yochanan, a lulav would probably be, let's say, five tefachim, maybe even taller than that. Why? Because the shidra itself has to be a fourth tefach. And above the shidra, we have all the olim that come above it. Okay. So the Gemara asks a double kasha, meaning a kasha on both Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. Because again, both Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan agree that what's the shir of a lulav? Four tefachim, correct? Four tefachim. The machlokis is going to be, well, where does that fourth, what comprises, what sets up the fourth tefa? Shmuel says, let's look at the entire lulav from tip to toe, from head to bottom. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, you go from the bottom of the lulav till the top of the shidra, and you've got to get four tefachim up until the shidra. But both agree that the shir of a lulav is four tefachim. Tanan, our Mishnah says, lulav sheyesh bo gimel tefachim, which the Mishnah identifies as kedei l'nanea bo. That if you want to do a nanuim, you know, to shake the lulav, as long as the lulav has three tefachim, you can shake the lulav. And it's kosher. So this is a stira to both Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. So Gemara answers, Ema, what we have to do is add one letter to the Mishnah. And Rashi assumes that they changed the gears in the Mishnah at this point. U'kidei l'nanea bo. So it doesn't mean that since the lulav has three tefachim, it's already considered kidei l'nanea bo, but rather it's three tefachim and then u'kidei l'nanea bo. Meaning, and above and beyond the three tefachim, we need kidei l'nanea bo, which means an extra tefa. Where is that extra tefa? According to Shmuel, it's in the lulav as a whole, and according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's in the shidra of the lulav. That's what we have here in the sugya. And that's what the Gemara says, Marked Islay U Marked Islay. That what is this Kidei L'nanea bo? Is according to Shmuel, it means the entire lulav has the extra tefach. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, it means the shidra of the lulav has the extra tefach. So on both sides, look, we can't argue with the Gemara. The Gemara is adding a letter to the Mishnah. But let's go back to the Mishnah. Let's read the Mishnah the way the Gemara wants us to read the Mishnah. And the Mishnah says the following: Lulav sheyesh bo shlosha tefachim, u'kidei l'nanea bo kosher. Does anybody find that a little bit odd, Michael? What do you? I see you smiling. So you probably, isn't there something strange about the language of the Mishnah? Because what is the shear of a lulav? Now that, well, Don already gave it away before, but now we've seen it in the Gemara. The shear of a lulav is what?
Four
tefachim. If you were writing the Mishnah, if you were a Yudah Nasi, what would you have written?
Four.
Shir alulav arba tefachim. That does statement. The Mishnah didn't say that. The Mishnah says, lulav sheyesh bo shlosha tefachim, and that's not enough. Of course, I need u'kidei l'nanea bo. In a sense, what the Mishnah's done for us, it's kind of like split the shir of a lulav, again, it's not mistak, but into two parts. There's the part of gimel tefachim, and then there's the part of an extra tefach. And the extra tefach is separated from the three tefachim, not physically, but in linguistically, in the presentation of the Mishnah, because we need that extra tefach for what purpose? Kidei l'nanea bo. So why did the Mishnah have to drive me crazy? And then the Gemara has to object to Rav, to Shmuel, and to Rav Yochanan, and add another word, another letter, u. Why didn't say it straight? The simplest way of conveying the message that the shir of a lulav is four tefachim by saying just that. Vishir haluav arba tefachim. Why does the Mishnah say, instead of saying luav sheyesh bo arba tefachim kosher, the Mishnah chose to say luav sheyesh bo shlosha tefachim u kidei l'nanea bo, and the extra tefach kidei l'nanea bo?
1500 years of discussion.
So I thought,
does Rabbi Yochanan agree
this
with
is
that?
Like a kruma svara that, what?
Does Rabbi Yochanan agree with that?
Can't change the Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan
doesn't agree with four. No, I'm saying it doesn't have to be, the minimum isn't four.
Rabbi Yochanan says it's four up to the end of the Shidra. Correct? Beyond that, you know, add whatever you want. Right?
Minimum of four.
But the minimum of the lulav according to Rabbi Yochanan is four, just that he needs the four up to the end of the Shidra. That's called Mark and Islay. But I'm asking a linguistic question, which usually when you have these diyukim in the language, it's got to tell you something. And the Mishnah must be telling me some sort of message here by taking the shear of the lulav and breaking it down into two component parts. One is called the shear of lulav, which he calls shlosha. And then he says, u'kidei l'nanea bo, which the Gemara interprets means you have to add another tefach. Again, mark it isle. So I thought when I read this, and again, if you laugh at me, you're 100% right for laughing at me. Because what I'm about to say is, Babish, dok v'tishkach. You should hear it and just totally erase it from your memory. That maybe what the Mishnah is telling me is that the extra tefach is only the Rabbanah. So what would be, according to the Mishnah, if I had a lulav that's three tefachim high, and I took the lulav on Sukkos, was that a meaningless mitzvah?
No.
On a Doraisa level, I fulfilled the mitzvah. The Rabbanan added another piece to the puzzle, another extra requirement of an extra tefillah. But what I just told you is absolutely wrong. Because if you look in the Rambam, Yirtz Hashem will take a look, and if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, the Tur, and the Machaber, they all say that a lulav has to be four tefachim, period. They make no distinction whatsoever between the first three tefachim and the fourth tefach. And it's all Doraisa. So why then again, my question, did the Mishnah break this up into two parts? So to answer this question, I want to ask a question which was asked by the Ritva many, many centuries ago. The Ritva wants to know, what happens if you take a hadas that's four tefachim high? Does the lulav have to be five tefachim? Now again, this sounds like a wild question.
It's not, yes.
But the Ritva takes this question very, very seriously.
Why is it a wild question?
That's only for dramatic purposes. You'll get to know my style. The Rav used to say about himself that the reason why people call him a good Magid Shir is because he's an actor. Yeah. Do you follow my question, Phil?
Yes.
Well, what are you telling me? You're telling me that the Shir of a Lulav is a relative Shir? I can promise you, Phil, whenever you see the word Shir anywhere in the Torah, anywhere in the Shas, it's always absolute. It doesn't shift and it doesn't change. Again, you might say that in the Kibbutz of those days was different than our Kibbutz, but that's a different point. But I'm just saying, you wouldn't say it's a Kibbutz if, you know, relative to something else. So you jacked up the height of Adah. Imagine, Phil, did you ever measure Adas to make sure it only had three Tfachim? And not an inch more?
Mine come with a hashgacha on the bag.
Ah, okay. So you never even bothered measuring it, right? But let's say you were buying loose hadassim. You know, in the old days, that's what we did. We didn't have all these packages, you know. Nowadays, it's no good. We don't need chayim tomorrow. Just get whatever in the, you know, the jack in the box. That's all. But for those of us who remember the old days, we used to choose hadassim. Hadassim come in different sizes. So was there, you know, if I look at Shulchan Aruch and I say to myself, wait a minute, I just measured my hadas and it's more than three tefachim. Am I going to find a sif in Shulchan Aruch that says, wait a minute, you're buying a hadas that's more than three tefachim, that's a problem? Because now you're going to have to jack up the height of the lulav. And that makes the shear of a lulav a relative shear. Says the Ritva, an unbelievable chiddush, that the reason why the Mishnah added the words the Yeshbo Kedel and Aneabo, and the reason why the Mishnah split the shear of lulav into two parts, is because the lulav is not always required for, it's not always going to be sufficient to add an extra tefach to the lulav. It's relative. Kedel and Aneabo. The words Kedel and Aneabo are telling you, according to the Ritva, and the Ran agrees with him, that we need that extra tefach above the hadas. And that makes it into a relative shear. The first three tefachim, that's absolute. There's nothing to talk about. You know, don't even mention a lulav that's less than three tefachim. But now you've gotten three tefachim. Now, says the Ritva, what I need is an extra tefach above the hadas.
At least an extra tefach,
I'm saying. Why? Because kedel and aneabo. And that's going to change the halach entirely. If the Mishnah would have said shir lulav dal tefachim, then we would have understood that's it. That's absolute. Measure your lulav again, mark it isle. You got four tefachim. That's the end of the story. Sof sipur. You know, finito. I don't have to talk to you about the size. Buy yourself the tallest hadas in the world. You know, I know some people who would do such a thing. In my old shul back in Flatbush, I remember we had this guy, I'm telling you, Moshe, you would have laughed. He used to buy an esrog that looked like a football, you know, and that was his big thing, you know, that was his holiday.
Good, it was probably a very expensive one, too.
No, maybe not.
Thus, basically, if it was possible, I hope you didn't pay too much for it. Because there's also a maximum size to an esrog. But okay,
I've seen a real big one.
You're going back to, you know, today Flatbush is like Borough Park, but I'm going back to Flatbush when you could count, on one hand, you can count the Orthodox Jews.
not anymore anymore.
That's it. You know, you know Flatbush like Borough Park, but yeah, I'm talking about Flatbush
Park now,
where everybody came to shul jingling their coins in their pocket. You know, that's why my father was a Rav in Flatbush in those days. Rav Lichtenstein was masbid my father. And he said about my father, it's not the, you know, people think, oh, Flatbush, it's a given, you know. He said, I remember he mentioned Rabbi Shafir also. He said these were the rabbanim who came to a wasteland. I mean, people were such amaratzim.
There's nothing there.
They didn't know how to say Kaddish. He had a balabas. You'll laugh at this, but it's a true story. He used to get up and say Scotch, Scotch, Yehi Rabba. That's how he couldn't pronounce Yiskalu Yiskalish. So one time I bought him a bottle of scotch, and I said, well, it's J&B, which is the best.
True. Well, he said, oh, you're making fun of me? I said, cash? Hey, scotch?
Well, it's just good to see you. Okay. So where was Hal? So the Ritva comes along, and he says that the extra tefach is a relative requirement. It might be a tefach, it might be more than a tefach, it all depends upon what kind of adasim you bought. Because the kedela nanebo means that If you don't have the towering of the lulav above the hadas of at least a minimum of one tefach, whatever that hadas is, if it's three tefach minimum, but it might be much taller, then you're not yotzei the mitzvah. So I wanted to open up the Rambam with you and ask you if the Rambam accepts the Ritva.
That was the Ritva.
Okay. So let me open up to the Rambam. How are we doing on the clock? We still have a few minutes?
It's 10 after now.
5 minutes is good.
Yeah.
Perek Zayin Halacha Ches in Hilchos Nidah.
That's what?
Perek Zayin Halacha Ches. That's 7-8. Okay, 7 with an akuda time. 8. Kama Shir Orach Kol Min Mehem. You know, in the previous halacha, he mentioned the four minim. He said they were all ma'akev. One, you have to have all four or bust. But what's the shir of the length of each one of the minim? Lulav. Ein pachos me'arba tfachim. Interesting. He rewrites the Mishnah. The Mishnah didn't say ein pachos me'arba tfachim. The Mishnah said three tfachim plus another tefach to kedela le'maneh. Well, the Rambam says
final answer.
Yeah, because the Rambam wants to tell you that the shir of a lulav is four tfachim.
Why does it say okay. Ein pachos?
Ein pachos.
Why ein pachos?
Why doesn't he say shir lulav?
It seems to imply that in a certain case, the shir of a lulav would actually be more than four.
Well, in your hava, you know, but not in the Rambam. The Rambam says ein pachos me'arba.
Not less than four.
Right.
So it doesn't say four.
It could be that it also needs to be five.
It could be that it also needs to be six. It may depend on the size of your hava.
Right. So again, what I want to do is read the Rambam, and then you tell me whether the Rambam accepts the Ritva or not. Okay? Because I think, if you hang in there for another minute, you'll see the answer jumping out at you from the page of the Rambam. Okay. Fine. Hadas v'arova ein pachos mishlosha tfachim. Okay. V'imhayu aruchim, if they were longer or taller than three tfachim, ksherim. That's fine. Now listen to the Rambam. The Rambam says the following. V'im agad haluav. Now, mind you, the Rambam holds that lulav ein tzarich agad. Again, it's zekeh le'aveyu, we do the agad, it beautifies, but strictly according to halacha, you don't require agad. But he went ahead and he did an agad. So the Rambam says, V'im agad haluav. Okay, now, I don't want to get distracted here because there's a part of the Rambam in which he paskins like Rabbi Yochanan against Reish Lakish, against Shmuel. You remember there was an inner machlokes about whether the four tfachim is the shidra or even above the shidra. So again, try not to get distracted because there are many different dimensions in this Rambam. I'm only interested in one dimension of the Rambam. I just want to know, is the Rambam going to agree with the Ritva that if the hadasim are too tall, they go beyond three tfachim, which the Rambam says is okay, that the lulav has to be taller as well. So listen to the Rambam's language. V'im agad halulav tzarech shiyeh shidro shalulav yotzei min hadas tefach o yoser. He accepts Rabbi Yochanan again, but Avi, do me a favor, put that in the back verse, because again, that's going to totally derail you from our discussion.
He accepts the Ritva.
Exactly, he seems to accept the Ritva, but who can tell me that he rejects the Ritva? Again, the Rambam says, "V'im agad halulav." Then he says, "Tzarch shiyel." I'm going to skip the word shidro because, again, that's obvious discussion about Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel. I don't want to get distracted with that. Tzarch shiyel halulav yotze min adas. We're talking on top. Tefach o yose. Does he accept the ritva?
It seems like he does. He accepts that he only.
Yes and no.
Only
when. Exactly.
Without an egg,
if he took the option of doing the egghead, which again he wasn't obligated to do so, then he needs for he requires that the lulav be an extra tefach. So let's just summarize. According to the ritva, there's an absolute rule that whatever the size of the hadas is above three tefachim, that's going to determine the size of the lulav. So when you add X to three tefachim in the hadas, then you add an extra tefach to the four tefachim of the lulav. That's an absolute rule, according to the ritva. The Rambam qualifies it. On the one hand, the Rambam does accept the ritva, but only partially. And the Rambam assumes that if you've done the agad, then the hadas will determine the size of the lulav. If the hadas is above four tefachim, then a commensurate, the lulav has to be above. If the hadas is above three tefachim, then lulav in a commensurate way will have to rise above the hadas by an extra tefach, going beyond the four tefachim. But that's only the Rambam says if you did an agad. If you didn't do an agad, imagine you took the three minim in one hand, it has to be your right hand, okay, l'chatchila, and you took the esrog in your left hand, but there's no agad, then the Rambam says that the shear of a lulav is four tefachim. So if we leave out the case of agad for a moment, and we're going to have to rack our brains and figure out why the halacha changes in the case of an agad, what is four tefachim according to the Rambam? It's a shear. It's the shear of a lulav. So again, the absolute shear of a lulav to be yotze the mitzvah is four tefachim. The Rambam says if he did the agad, then the lulav might have to climb a little bit higher because the hadas is one three tefachim. Whereas the Ritva seems to say that there is no shear of four tefachim. The last tefach, says the Ritva, will always be relative, will always be determined by the size of the hadas. Okay, we'll stop here for a minute. We'll try to pick this up tomorrow. Shkoyach to everybody. Well, it works like this. Tomorrow we have Chaim Shiner who's coming, Shriner who's coming from 9:30 to 12:30. And he's going to be bringing in lulavim and esrogim and teaching us the halachas hands-on, as we say. And if everybody could be here, that would be great. If you can't be here for all 3 hours, come for an hour or a half hour, whatever you can.
Okay.
Now, at 12:30, will I be able to give the shir? I don't know. Oh, yes.